Voice of Fintech.
Welcome to Voice of Fintech, a podcast mapping out the Swiss and global fintech scene, connecting fintech enthusiasts with startups, incubators, accelerators, business angels and VCs, and incumbents interested in partnerships. Voice of Fintech will help you navigate the fintech ecosystem. Here you can listen to the startup founder stories, what investors and incumbents are looking for when dealing with startups, and find out more about resources provided by incubators and accelerators. My name is Rudy Falad, and I'll be hosting this podcast. Hello and welcome to Voice of Fintech. Today we're going to talk about what's been on the minds of people for the last 12 months, and we're going to talk about AI, and especially generative AI, because we have an expert with us today, Bernard, and Bernard Maurer will talk about his new book on AI and everything around it. So thank you so much for joining us, and I'm very curious to hear more. How are you today?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I'm looking forward to talking about generative AI and my new book, Generative AI in Practice.
Wonderful. So let's start by giving people a bit of a frame of reference. How did you get to where you are today? And I know that you are based in Milton Keynes, so we chatted a little bit about Formula One. So I think you didn't have to drive the Red Bull Formula One to work, but more in terms of your career and your interests towards AI. How did you get here today?
Yes, I grew up in Germany, went over to the UK, to Cambridge to study, and they then offered me a job afterwards. So I then became a researcher looking into how companies use data. And I've done years of research, years of writing, from over 100 academic papers to thousands of magazine articles, from Harvard Business Review to Forbes. I'm a regular contributor. I do a lot of talking. So I've been involved with the World Economic Forum. I've just come back from Mumbai, where I was doing a keynote at the largest tech and leadership event in Asia. And I do a lot of consulting work. So I work with companies in the field of technology. So clients include companies like Amazon and Microsoft and Google and IBM and pretty much any other tech company. And I have a real passion for technology and its impact on business and society and how we can use technology to make our world a better place.
Wonderful. So a researcher and a practitioner, can I say that?
Absolutely.
All right, perfect. So let's level set a little bit, because many people open up to AI recently with the advent of generative AI, but the AI has been with us for much longer, right? So let's maybe explain a little bit of how we got to what we call AI today.
Yeah, very good. So I believe my first book on AI was published over 15 years ago, and it's nice to finally have it in the public awareness. And it really started back in the 1950s, where there was a research conference that looked at how machines could perform tasks that were previously seen as requiring human intelligence. And there were big hopes. And then over the years, the whole field of AI has gone through a few hype cycles where it was hyped up and then it didn't quite deliver. And then we had AI winters and then we had AI summers again when it came back. But it has been this gradual evolution, and we've seen huge advancements in machine learning, in neural networks more recently, and then breakthroughs around how AI can process human language, so natural language processing and deep learning. And a few things came together recently, especially the vast amount of data we now have. We have big data in the world, and the ability to store this data in the cloud over the internet, so you can access it over fast networks, you can process it in the cloud or on the edge on your device increasingly. And this has given us the ability to use all these thoughts that we've had for a long time, that we could actually have these thinking machines. And we now have powerful algorithms. We've got the data, we've got the technology and the processing power. And this really led to the breakthroughs of generative AI, which I believe is the most powerful technology humans have ever had access to. And it will pretty much change everyone's job. It will change every business, and it will transform every industry over the next 10 years.
All right, so let's dive into this. Why do you think that generative AI gained such traction? So we had AI from the 50s, we had summers, winters, and now generative AI approached or spoke to many more people, to general public took to it very kindly. So why such a change versus traditional machine learning and things like that?
Yeah, to some extent, it has democratized AI and has brought it right into the consciousness of everyone. Because in the past, we had AI. The first versions of AI were expert systems where you not only needed the data, but you needed to tell the algorithm exactly how to use the data to come up with a solution. And this meant for really complicated problems, it never performed very well because there are lots of things where we as humans don't really understand the rules. Or the rules are so complicated. Things like natural language and translating things from one language to another. Anything that is knowledge that we are learning from experience, for example. So if you said, how do you recognize your parents on a photograph? We can't explain how we do this, and therefore we can't write rules and we can't use data for this. And then these systems became better. We had machine learning, deep learning, that was giving the machines the ability to learn from data. And what we now have is these really intuitive web interfaces and apps where anyone can now use them. And the point I'm making in the book, and I want to make that is really important, is that generative AI is far more than just ChatGPT and chatbots. It is now not only able to create written content, so you can ask it to write poems, fiction books, scientific books, or pretty much any article, web content, but it can also create images. And this will change things like the design. So we now have generative design capabilities. When if you want to design anything from a car to a new machine to a new tool, you can go to a generative AI tool and say, hey, these are the characteristics of this new tool that I would like. Come up with new designs. In architecture, it will be transformative because you can say, I want to build this new house. This is what I want. Come up with some ideas. So it can generate images and designs. And this will be transformative for industries like video gaming, for example, where at the moment everything is pre-programmed. So if you play an online game, for example, the characters you encounter there have all been designed by a video game designer. The environments have been designed. In the future, the environment and the characters and the conversations you have with those characters will be designed on the fly, completely personalized to you. It is able to transform the music industry because beyond text and image creation, it can compose music and write songs and write the music for it. And these are becoming super sophisticated. And it can help us analyze data. This is something we don't really quite understand, why these tools are so amazingly good at analyzing data, because they're trained on pretty much the entire world's language and knowledge that we have, but they're really good at analyzing data. So analyzing even data across lots of complex data sets, from numeric data to text data to voice data. And it is able to do things like programming. So it is super effective at generating code. Code, if you think about it, is just another language, right? So it can program in pretty much any language. So if you said, I want a program to do this, I want an app to do that, it can simply design it for you. And hopefully this gives people a sense that it is not just a chatbot. It is so much more. It has implications for so many different industries.
But coming back to my original point, so why did it speak to so many people? And you said because it was so easy to use, right? So user interface is so easy that anybody can use it, right? So is that the main reason?
I think that the main reason was because in the past we had AIs, but they required huge amounts of data. You needed a data scientist to come up with the algorithm. You needed very powerful computing resources to do this. Now we have an online interface or a web app or a mobile app on your phone. And this allows you to do this without any, you don't have to think about the data you need. You don't have to think about the tech that sits behind all of this. And anyone can do it. You can have a human natural language conversation with this thing. And what blew people away is the sophistication of the results that you could get from this, that have this all-knowing friend that is on your phone that can answer pretty much any question and help you with pretty much any task.
All right. So we already started to talk about which industries can also be impacted, right? It's not only about text. It's also about generating images, generating code, generating videos, really. So what will be left for humans to do then?
Very good question. And this is a question I get asked pretty much after every talk I give. So when I give a keynote somewhere, people ask me, hey, this is all mind-blowing stuff. What does this mean for humans in the future? And I actually ended up writing an entire book about it because I have three children and I worry about what they will be doing in the future. And in my book, Future Skills, I talk about 20 skills that humans will need to thrive in this AI world. And there are some technical skills. So we need some level of technical competence. We need to understand where this technology is going. We need to understand something about data and about cyber threats. But beyond that, the remaining 17 skills are really the skills that really define us as humans. They are the things that involve human skills that machines can't excel at yet. So there are things like emotional intelligence, critical thinking, creative problem solving, interpersonal communication, all of those things that really make us human. So what this means is that we need to understand how this technology will impact our jobs and it will augment all of our jobs, but to different degrees. And we need to then think, okay, what tasks am I doing in my job at the moment? And which of those can I give to an intelligent machine that can do this better and faster? And which of those tasks really require this human input? And then we need to focus on those skills. And my hope is that this will actually make our world a more human place where we give some of the mundane, repetitive tasks, the things that really don't use this amazing potential that we have as human beings, and pass this on to machines so we can contribute the things that the machines are not good at and we are really good at.
Then you already talked about gaming, videos, coding, and things like this. So linking it to what you just said, what does that mean for education? Do we need to focus on those skills that you mentioned instead of something which is maybe a bit time-bound? Like sometimes people say, should I drop everything and instead of French, learn Python? And other people say, just like with any other language, maybe Python will not be here for more than 10 years. Maybe you should focus on something more timeless. And these are the skills that you alluded to. How do you think about future of education?
Really good question. And one that I think about a lot. I'm also a governor at a large school here where my kids go to. And I think about the curriculum and what schools do today. And I believe that the current education system around the world is no longer fit for purpose, because you are saying, okay, should someone learn Python? The fact is that tools like ChatGPT and Google Gemini and Microsoft Copilot, they are amazingly good at coding and writing Python. That is probably not the best use of someone's time. So the best use of someone's time is to focus on those skills that have this longevity and that are, so I believe that instead of having this traditional model where a teacher stands in front of the classroom, teaches a topic that then kids try to memorize is so out of date. And I think the things we are teaching is also completely out of date. So teaching facts, what we need to do is we need to really teach those skills I've just talked about, this emotional intelligence, interpersonal communication, creative problem solving. So we need to turn schools into these maker places where they work in teams, where they learn to work in diverse teams, to work with each other, to solve problems, to, we need to get people to think critically much more, really to assess, where is this information coming from? Is this real? All of those skills, complex problem solving is another important skill. And those skills, I feel, we don't focus on enough in schools. And it will also change the way we teach, because if you think about this, I just talked about all these amazing capabilities of generative AI to generate video, to generate voice, to generate content. So this means I can now completely customize the teaching. And I have this, when I look at my own teaching, I teach at Oxford University and Cambridge University. And I sometimes have days where I think, oh, that was a really good session. This executive course went fantastically well. I engaged everyone and they understood the topic. And then sometimes I have days where I don't perform as well. And so with these generative AI tools, we can make sure that if you want to learn a new topic, you have the best teacher in the world teaching you this topic. Or even if you say, I really like this celebrity and I'm a young person and I like rapping, so I want my teacher to rap some of the topics to me, and I want this celebrity to do the course for me, and I want this to be delivered in a customized way to me, so someone that really understands. So if I went on an AI course now, I don't need to spend 3 days learning what AI is because I already understand this. And the same we do in schools. So in schools, we have very often classrooms of 30 kids or more. And the teacher has the huge challenge of trying to differentiate their teaching and have different streams saying, okay, I want to stretch the people that understand the topic a bit more. I want to bring the people along that struggle with this topic. And then I have this group in the middle. And they try to do this, but in the future, that delivery of content can be completely personalized to everyone. So a kid can have this amazing experience. They could put their virtual reality goggles on. They can be in a room with the best teacher they can imagine, or they believe is the best teacher, that then delivers the content in a voice, in a style that they really engage with. And the content is completely personalized to where they are on their learning journey. And then we use the schools and the teachers to focus on these interactions, on discussing, on learning, on creative problem solving. And to some extent, the role of teachers is also a safeguarding role. So all of those, I think, will make the education system of the future better, more efficient, and potentially even democratize it. Because once we have the systems in place, in theory, anyone can have access to these personalized learning journeys.
Wonderful. I think you give back to school another meaning, because now I feel like I'd like to go back and experience this. But yeah, I'm not sure it's going to be ready for September 24, but maybe soon after. Yeah. But you mentioned something about interactions, right? So I wanted to follow up on this, because there are other transformative technologies we hear about, or you can call them exponential technologies. So how will generative AI work with those? So for example, if we can talk about gene editing, immersive internet, blockchain, quantum computing, all of these things, how do you see the interaction evolving?
Yeah, so what I'm arguing for in my book, Generative AI in Practice, is that generative AI sits almost at the center of a number or a cluster of other transformative technologies. What we've seen in the past is that previous industrial revolutions were basically driven by one main technology, be this mechanization and steam engines, electricity, computing. Now we have a number of truly transformative technologies that individually could probably trigger their own industrial revolution. But what we're seeing is that all of these different technologies, chain technology, quantum computing, gene editing, material science, the metaverse and extended reality, all of these different technologies are now interacting with each other and with generative AI to enhance each other. So for example, quantum computing will give us computing power to solve the most complicated problems that we can't solve with traditional computers today, and give us computing power that is a trillion times faster than even the biggest supercomputers today. And quantum computers will be available via the cloud. If you go to companies like Google or Amazon or Microsoft, in the future they will give you the ability to use quantum computing as a service, as part of their cloud offering. And this means it can accelerate our generative AI capability. So if you want to design something really complex, like a new street system in a mega city, or something that really most computers today would be incapable of doing, or weather forecasting or climate change forecasting, all these really complex topics, they will be able to solve those. So there's huge promise there that things like quantum computing will accelerate the developments in generative AI. On the flip side, generative AI will also accelerate other technologies. So if you think about the metaverse, the immersive internet, augmented reality, virtual reality, the promise here is that if I, for example, I want to use online shopping and augmented reality, I can try on my watches now, I can try on jewelry. In an ideal world, in the future, you might want to try on clothes online. And instead of having some pictures of dresses and jeans and shirts and things you might want to buy, and you have no idea what they will look like on you, you can use generative AI capabilities to create an image or a video of you wearing that piece of that jeans or that dress in an environment. So if you say, I need a new dress or a new suit for a business meeting or a cocktail party, generative AI can then take, it already knows your measurements, hopefully, because you can scan yourself. It knows how well the clothes will fit you. It can then overlay both of these and then can put you in a cocktail environment, cocktail party environment, or a business meeting environment where you can see how will I look wearing these different clothes, even combining different types of clothes. And this is something that is currently almost impossible to do, but generative AI will enable us to do this. The other thing is companies want to have some sort of presence in this metaverse, in this digital world. So we are not talking about moving from a website to some sort of destination where people can put their headsets on and walk through and experience it. And again, creating those has always been a huge barrier, because you need lots of people that can program, and they usually work in the gaming space. With generative AI, you can simply write a prompt saying, hey, build me a little metaverse space for my new store. I want this to look like this. I want it to be this size, this. I want it to be really modern. I want whatever you can imagine. And then the generative AI tool will create this for you. In gene editing, for example, and biology, I think it has huge potential, because generative AI has this amazing ability to analyze vast amounts of data. And for example, if you finding a new drug candidate for a disease is super difficult, but now we have gene technology, we can identify gene markers. Again, we can use generative AI to help us sift through all the different gene markers to identify why, or the genes that are responsible for certain diseases. And then finding a new medicine is not even finding a needle in the haystack. It is far more complex, where you have trillions of possibilities of different enzymes, different ways of administrating drugs into the body, and so on. But generative AI can go through all of those and create scenarios and short track and fast track this drug development. And we've seen this with COVID vaccines. We've seen this with cancer drugs recently, where generative AI was able to accelerate the drug development process from years to weeks and months. And for me, this has huge potential. So this interaction of all of these different technologies and how they're accelerating each other is causing this new world of hyper innovation, where what I'm seeing is that the next 10 years, where all of these technologies will come together and accelerate each other, we will see a level of innovation that we have not seen before.
Okay, so let's see how this pans out. Obviously, early days of all of those technologies sometimes bring some issues. So let's talk about some risks and challenges that are related to generative AI. It could be misinformation. It could be deepfakes, right? We're in the election year in the US. But also, we've heard about it, right? The copyright issues, the fact-checking. Some people say ChatGPT, sorry to say, but it will draft a post which is on the level of Wikipedia with no references, no checking the facts, and no regard for copyright. So what can we do about this today?
Yeah, so there are many concerns, and many of the ones you've already mentioned are very real. There is currently a lack of transparency that I see as a problem. So for example, that these we don't really understand how these systems work. So they use these vast amounts of data, they do something with it, and they generate outcomes that are mind-blowingly good, but we don't really know how they're doing it. So we don't really know why generative AI tools are so good at analyzing data, because they were trained on words. And then there is still a problem with bias, because these systems are trained on the world's data, and the world's data has biases in them, be this gender biases or many other concerns, racial biases. And early versions of these models were not very good at this, because they simply learned from the past data. And if you said, give me some job examples that women would do, they might give you examples of housewives and secretaries, and then give me examples of jobs men would do, and you would get lawyers and doctors. And obviously, this is not the world we live in today, and not anything we want to carry on doing, making these mistakes. And so what's interesting is that all of these systems have now, they're programming these systems so they will not generate biased content. But we are still not quite there yet, because when Google recently released their latest image generation tool, it almost went the other way. It became so politically correct. So you would say, can please give me an image of Vikings, for example, and then the image would generate some black Vikings, some Vikings with Native American features, and you think that's not quite historically correct now. So we need to find the right balance here. Then there are some privacy concerns, because these models suck in so much data. There's obviously copyright issues. This will be super interesting to see what happens over the next year or two, where these lawsuits will hopefully conclude, where some organizations say, okay, you've used my data, authors say you've used my books and I've not given you permission. So that is interesting. Then there are ethical dilemmas, security dilemmas. There's a concentration of power problem, where some of these companies running these tools will become hugely powerful. There's a risk that we become over-dependent as humans on AI. Then there's job displacement and a really massive problem around AI-powered weapons, be the cyber attacks or even intelligent drones. All of these things I have concerns about. Deepfakes I have concerns about. I actually believe that there's a real risk that in a matter of years, the vast majority of content online could be fake. It could be generated by AI or augmented by AI. And if you think about this, we are already seeing this trend. If people put their holiday photos on Instagram, they go and put a nice little filter on top and they edit out the busy people on the beach in the background to make it look as if they were on an empty beach by themselves. And so everything we will see in the future, there's a real risk that it could be fake. And because AI is so good at generating things like blog articles and social media content, that the vast majority of content could just be all generated by AI, and then we almost become over reliant on them. So there are lots of risks that I'm seeing, but hopefully we will get the balance right. We need some level of regulation. We need some companies need to apply ethical principles, and I'm seeing some progress on this. Microsoft has just recently released their ethical stance on generative AI, and I really applaud them for what they've done. And in the same way, companies need to think about, do they use AI ethically? Do they use it in the right way? And they need to mitigate their own risks.
Okay. All right. So hopefully this is all get sorted. So before I let you go, I just have one final question. What's the best way to reach out, how to get your book, and what kind of people would you like to hear from most?
Yeah, no, I'm always happy for people to reach out. I have a community of over 4 million followers across all my different platforms. The platform I use most is LinkedIn, so people can connect with me there. They can join my newsletters. I have 3 newsletters on LinkedIn that all have like 1.8 million subscribers. So they are a great way to keep up with what I'm doing. And my website and my YouTube channel. So I have a website, bernardma.com, where you can find hundreds of articles and videos. And then on my YouTube channel, you can find lots of videos and interviews and conversations on the future of work, the future of jobs, and the future of technology.
Wonderful. So thank you very much, Bernard. So for everyone who would like to hear more or learn more about AI and technology, go to bernardmar.com. So with double R. And thank you so much, Bernard, once again. And good luck to you and to all of us using these technologies. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Rudy.
Thank you for listening to Voice of FinTech podcast. If you haven't already, check out also voiceoffintech.com, where you will find all the episodes and additional resources related to the podcast. You can also subscribe to Voice of FinTech on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or any other podcast app that you like. If you have any suggestions on the topics or guests, or how to make this podcast better for you, please email us at info@voiceoffintech.com. Happy to hear from you. Thank you.